So it's super to be here. I hope it's we'll try to make it fun and enjoyable. I don't know if we succeed or not. So today there'll be no quantum field theory, and in fact there will be no actual, like, this is I explained here on this board what kind of problems the math I'm going to explain, what kind of problems does this math solve. Maybe the prototypical problem. Suppose I have a algebraic symplectic manifold X, and I have a torus actinium preserving the symplectic form. Then I might look at the fixed locus, one component of the fixed locus, and that will have some, since preserved symplectic form will have some attracting direction exactly matched to the repelling directions, and so I can look at the attracting manifolds. So attracting manifolds are all points on X that are attracted by the torus to some fixed point F, so as A goes to some particular direction in the torus, it goes A to zero in some particular way, they get attracted here. And this set of pairs, if I have, so it's attracting manifold set of pairs, some point X and attract and the limit point F, that set of pairs is locally around this component of the fixed locus. That's a Lagrangian in the product. Both X is symplectic and its fixed locus is also symplectic because A was a preserving symplectic form. So that's a Lagrangian. And it's a question how to extend that Lagrangian in some canonical way away from this neighborhood to make it have some kind of nice Lagrangian correspondence in some sense or another, could be or whatever. So in some cohomology theory, for instance. And the issue is there, of course, that if you just take the closure, that could be something very difficult because that could increase, intersect the other components of the fixed locus in some very complicated way. And we don't want to take the closure. We want to take something more better than this. Something and so this is the kind of problem, this first kind of problem we're considering. So it's a, you have a nice Lagrangian on some open set, you would like to extend it in the nicest possible way to, in some homology theory, to the whole space. And then your whole space, the way it's born in physical applications and math, it's very often stable locus in some ambient stack. And then you may want to ask the same question. If I have some nice Lagrangian on the stable locus, how can I extend it to the whole ambient stack? It's a problem of exactly the same flavor. So I understand there'll be a problem session today. I hope, yeah, we'll see how it goes. I'm not sure what's the level of your familiarity with cohomology or probably not with elliptic cohomology, but this is you can have a self-guided tour of this topic if you try to do this for the following axis, and where the A, you take the maximal torus that acts on that by symplectic transformations. So the zeroth thing is to do it for T star P1. The first thing is to do it for T star PN or general hypertrochic variety, and then it may be slightly more advanced to do it for T star Grassmannian. And if you're okay with ordinary Clairean cohomology, you should do it there. If you feel sufficiently advanced to do the elliptic cohomology, you should try it there. But I realize that many of you probably will not have enough background, but maybe I'll provide some of this lecture. We'll see. Anyway, so the general problem that this all somehow revolves around the following general problem. Take this and move it somewhere towards the middle. So if I have some x, and if I have some subset, maybe call it x prime. Then I have a map, then I'll write cohomology meaning any kind of cohomology. So since this is maps to here, cohomology maps the other way, so they have a map from cohomology of X to cohomology of X prime. Maybe I should have... Okay, maybe, I apologize. I should have managed my board slightly differently, but anyway. Let me do it right. Oh no. Here goes my eye choke. So, cohomology of X prime. And, oh no, look at this. It's ruined. Anyway. So, and the question is, what about extending cohomology classes is trying to you know, find some kind of inverse of this map, meaning this is so sad. So you want to have some cohomology class, you want from on this subset you would like to lift it here. And okay, so in topology there is a general answer to this question. Namely, what we should consider is we should consider sequence, you have a X prime, this maps to X, right? And then the next term of that is we want to like write like a log exact sequence. Means this maps here, and then we would like to make it an exact sequence, means we would like to contract that X prime. Well, this is means okay, we can do that. So this was this X prime, and we contract it, means we form a cone over that X prime. This would be kind of X on that X prime. And if we can continue, if we want to continue that, we can continue that. There's this long exact sequence so what does it mean? That now we will have to contract X, and if we contract X, well, we will get a suspension over prime. And so correspondingly there will be a long exact sequence in cohomology, meaning if I have some I cohomology here, then the kernel of this map will be I relative cohomology, or cohomology of that space reduced module that point, so X, X prime, and then here will be coming the I minus first cohomology of X prime, and so on. And here the co-kernel of that would be I plus first cohomology of X, X prime, and so forth. So if we would like this, so if we want to learn something about this map, means its kernel and the co-kernel are controlled by this term, right? So if we understand this spaces, or better, if I understand this map, for every I, then the kernel of this map will tell us about the co-kernel here, and the kernel and the image of this map will be the kernel of that. So we're in good shape to lift cohomology classes. And that's of course all extremely abstract. But to make it more concrete, we don't have to do it all at once. If we want some subset like there in that example, we had some component of the fixed locus, and then if we look at the attracting flow, its closure will hit some component, and all components of the fixed locus are ordered. So we can do that in stages. We can do it kind of one step at a time. So instead of having like this, we can have X, some kind of, I don't know, what's in my notes? How do I number them in my notes? Maybe some kind of X1 sitting inside of X2, sitting inside of X3, and so on and so forth. So we can do it, if we can some increasing sequence of topological spaces, we can try to lift the classes every time further and further. That's one thing. And the second thing, by this we can try to arrange, what we can try to arrange is every time there's some kind of model, there's some kind of model, good model for that map, so we can try want and can achieve in the situation that of interest to us, that that if I take the complement of xk, if my can maybe denoted, denote this m, okay, then I would like this embedding mk, so mk embeds into xk, and I would like this embedding to be some modal thing, so this is like a zero section, like zero section of a vector plot. So this is like the best possible situation. I have a zero, some vector bundle over some topological space. I embed the zero section, and that, so this means I'm trying to extend my cohomology classes from things which look like the complement of the zero section to the whole bundle. That makes sense? And things like this, this you can, you know, that sort of thing you can achieve very generally by some kind of JIT consideration. So in the situation where we, when we have some group action, you can always have a very nice, you have a group action, you have some stratification of your space, such that every step there is, including of each strata, is some kind of model thing which looks like that. And so maybe a good example to have in mind, and I maybe I'll draw it here so that we will be coming back to that. So if I think of, if I think of, maybe I'll write an explanation here and picture there. So if I want to draw P3 as a union of C3 plus union C2 union C1 union C0. So if I want to draw it in some kind of toric picture, then like that. So this is this is these are the points in the order of their attraction, how they're attracted to each other. So this is an so this is that's a simplex that's supposed to represent P3. And this is the top point of the attraction, and the top point of the attraction direction, so kind of the general, this, all three of this attract here, so this is the neighborhood of that C3 of that point, and then the complement of that C3 is this little P2, which you have, you see with this three point maybe, P1, P2. And so this is the there's a P2 here with these points, and this is the complement of that C3 in this picture. And so then we will so that next stratum would be things that attracted to that this P2. This is this C2 here. And then, so and then you see this. This is this. This it really does embed as the normal bounding to that is one dimensional. The beta zero section of that. And then the next term would be this C1 here. This is attracting manifold to that. This is the C. This attracting manifold. This P2, and then it has two dimensional normal bundle. And then finally sits. So this is the C1. And then finally, this is the C0 point. Make sense? So they instead of trying, so if we want to extract some cohomology class from here, we can do it in stage for here, there, and so forth. Yeah.
So I guess that you're using some sort of theory of like toric varieties here to make
yeah.
So I'm not super familiar with toric varieties. And especially, I don't quite understand, like, how do you get this action? Like, what do the attractors, how do you see them from this? I don't understand the connection.
Maybe a good problem session is a good place to discuss that, maybe.
All right.
All right, so then, so. So we therefore, that, I don't know, have or we can abandon the original lecture plan and go with toric geometry. So it mean it can be done either way, but I think problem session is better.
Yeah, that would be a great time for it.
Yeah. So that so then okay, so then we have some manifold M, and we would like which we embedded into total space of some vector bundle, complex vector bundle. So everything will be complex for us, maybe complex of a complex vector bundle. We call it V. And we would like to take, so what's the story here? We have to take X modulo X prime. Now X is the total space of the vector bundle. So this is X is the total space of the vector bundle, and X prime, so maybe X total space and X prime is X minus the zero section. And we would like to take that zero section and contract it to a point. Take all of that, leave the zero section out, and contract. So that's by definition, if you contract it, by definition, that's called the Thom space of this vector bundle. And so we would like to analyze what this exact sequence does for that model example. And that model, this you can then further reduce to some universal computation, because what does it mean to have a complex vector bundle over M? It means you have a map to the classifying space. So maybe vector bundle of rank R. So you have a map to classifying space in each point modulo GLR. And then over that you have universal bundle, namely CR modulo GLR. And everything is just pulled back from that standard example. And what's the so this is this would be now my new X. So this would be so we'll call this X. This would be X. And X prime will be this thing without, so X prime will be this thing without the zero section, X minus zero section. You see, if you remove zero out of CR, then all vectors there are conjugate. And in fact, so this, so in C we have two orbits of GLR. We have zero orbit, stabilizing the whole group, and we have the other orbit, of which the stabilizer is, well, it's a group of which the Levy subgroup is GLR minus one. So this X prime is point modulo GL R minus one, where this sits as one and whatever inside here. And so therefore, what we really need to analyze is that makes sense. So what we really need to analyze is this example here. Yeah, this is the board's gonna look nice only once after it's erased it somehow. So okay, we take point modulo GLR going to point modulo, or rather the other way around. So the space would go the other way around. Okay, the cohomology of that. Okay, cohomology of that goes to cohomology. One, and then the cohomology of that inside here, the cohomology of the top space, and okay, now it's time to talk about what is this. So now cohomology was standing for some cohomology theory yet unspecified, and it's easiest to just start with K theory. Raise your hand if you're familiar with topological K-theory. Awesome. Congratulations. So, for other one, I mean, if you're not, then we can talk about it in the problem session. So, what's a K-theory of point modulo group? This is what? These are functions on the group that are invariant under conjugation. So, in fact, we will be talking... So, in fact, I didn't say from the beginning that this is what is an elliptic cohomology class. An elliptic cohomology class is not an element of some algebra. So, usually if you have a topological space, cohomology of that, or extraordinary cohomology of that, usually is an algebra. But instead of being an algebra, that's like a section of some line bundle on some scheme. Okay? So, it's better to talk about the scheme first. So it's better to take this and take the spec of that. Over Z, if you'd like, and so this is, so we can have some base loop if you want, but let's say take it like that. So this is what's this? What is the? So if you have a functions invariant under conjugation of the group, right? The spec of that, that's the same as I take the group G, and I mod out by conjugation by the group G. And so that this map here, that's just a restriction. You have a function on G, and you restrict it to the subgroup. That makes sense? Now, in ordinary cohomology, and I apologize, slightly confusing, but I don't have two different letters for cohomology. I should have a fancy letter for this. This is like ordinary, so maybe I'll just write ordinary. Of point mod G, well, that's the Lie algebra of G mod conjugation. And again, for the Lie algebra, you have a Lie algebra, you have a subalgebra, you take functions, you restrict to that subalgebra. That makes sense? And so now, what is elliptic cohomology? So elliptic cohomology, in general, is going to be built out of some building blocks. So you have a topological space. And I apologize, in this talk I will be mixing. So it's usual. People do kind of topology of algebraic varieties. Topology of complex algebraic varieties, people usually mix compact group with the corresponding complex reductive groups. And that's, I'll be doing this in this talk consistently. So for every, this is, I hope I'm forgiving. So like for instance, I should be really writing point modulo unitary group here, because it's kind of more, well, I'll be forgiven back for that. Any x whatsoever, any x is built if with an action of a group G. Maybe first without them. If you have a topological space, then the topological space is built from, you know, it's kind of glued from disks with different dimensions, right? So if you, well, whatever, a nice topological space is glued from disks, whereby attaching the by attaching the boundaries of the disk. And if you have an action over group, this is strictly, I mean, this is not true, right? You have to specify not just disks, but also specify the orbit type of points in that disk, right? Because different orbits of a compact group. So now maybe this will be a compact group. Let's say compact group. Different orbits of a compact group, they're different, they're, you know, they correspond to different topological spaces. So you have to multiply this mod k mod some subgroup h. But the result that the basic building blocks in your theory are points mod subgroup. Right, so if you want to build cohomology theory in the presence of the action of the group, the basic building blocks are a disk is a disk. But then you have to take point mod subgroup. And we discussed this already for K theory. And so now this will be saying that the kind of our K theory of any variety is built out of that stuff where this runs over all possible subgroups, and the grand cohomology of anything is built out of that kind of block when this runs over subgroup. And now I have to give you the basic building blocks for elliptic cohomology. And that has a very beautiful answer. Namely, you can say it like this. And this will make very nice contact with. So this, maybe this is the closest, maybe the clo- this is the closest I will come with contact with the first lecture today. So I apologize, there's a certain discontinuity in how material is presented in this course. But okay, the group, you know, how are you gonna think about the group, how you think about group modular conjugation? You can think of this as a G bundles on a nodal curve. That's what a nodal P1. And if we have a G bundle on P1, it's say maybe degree zero stable. So if I have a degree zero semi-stable on nodal P1, then if I pull it back to normalization, if I unglue this node, this would be a trivial bundle. And all I have to specify is how I glue the two fibers of this trivial bundle together. And the gluing map is the element of the group. And since I'm free to trivialize at this point, I'm free to trivialize any way I like, then this would be a group modular conjugation. Similarly here, this is a slightly more interesting analysis, that's the same for a cuspidal curve. And so then you say that the spec of elliptic, or we know spec. The elliptic cohomology already is a scheme. So elliptic of point 1G. So elliptic G of the point, elliptic point 1G, that's the same thing. So this is degree zero semi-stable G bundles on the dual elliptic curve. So the elliptic cohomology depends on a curve. And you take, if I take a plane cubic, then this would be a nodal plane cubic, and this would be a cuspidal plane cubic. And now I pick a general one. But for the right covariance, I have to take the dual, because what I'd like this is covariant. It's covariant in both. Covariant in the group G and the elliptic curve. And this is for this covariance, I take the dual elliptic curve. Okay, so that's. Yeah, that's an elliptic curve. That's the most important thing here for us. Well, maybe one of the.
Yeah,
And so you check that this spaces have the exact same. So this there's some maps, and you want to glue a topological space out of stuff. There's some maps you'd like to have between these guys, and they're maps between these things, the way you like them to be. And maybe let's do an example. Maybe let's do two examples.
Is that linear? Is that space of degree zero bundles on E, is that linearized somehow? Do you really mean it as a moduli space? This is a really naive question. Like K-theory and cohomology, they're vector spaces.
This is like the spec of that. So I dropped the spec.
Thanks.
So this is like the end look of this part. This is an algebra. I took
Sorry,
the spec.
Great,
of,
great.
Yeah, this,
awesome.
this is not a spec of any algebra because it's not a fun. So I just right. It's thanks to this important clarifying remark. And so let's do two examples. One is, of course, if I take G to be,
your elliptic curve over the complex numbers or
over any kind of numbers, yeah.
So not yeah,
but over any kind of numbers, you have to specific what do you mean by G bundles. That's
okay.
Kind of that's a very delicate point. If I take what are the G bundles if G is finite over some kind of funny ring, that's a delicate question. But we're gonna gloss over that. For us, we today we do complex numbers, but in principle, you can do it. So could be over arbitrary ring if you want. So one example first is that if I take elliptic homology of point, and let's make the topologist happy just for once. I put U1 here. Okay. So this is really thoroughly a compact group. Then I should have the corresponding reductive group is C star GL1 whatever GL1 bundles. On the elliptic curve, so this is degree zero GL1 bundle on something it's called peak zero of E check, and that is E itself. And then if I'd like elliptic cohomology of point modulo U R, so that would be, so this is now, This is what? This is has this, well, I'll just give you the answer. This is the R symmetric power of the elliptic curve. And the corresponding, so this is given by R tuple of elements of the symplectic curve. So this unordered R tuples of elements. So in general, if you have some reductive group sitting here, then you're gonna get the thing for the maximal torus modulo the Weyl group. And so this is the Weyl group here. And so this is, so these are called elliptic triangles. Because if you have a degree R bundle, that means you map to the space, and it means by pullback and cohomology of your variety, you get the spec of your cohomology maps here, and that would be, this would be the elliptic triangle. And so now we have it here. So I hope you remembered what was here. Right. So this is a scheme, and we're interested in like functions on the scheme or sections of some land bundle on the scheme. So I'll write for functions. I write O, usual notation for functions. So O of elliptic cohomology of point modulo GLR. I guess I should write UR, it's shorter, one letter shorter. So this will gonna map by restriction. So this is these are functions on GLR bundles, and then this will go to elliptic homology point modulo GLR minus one. As you restrict it to a smaller set, and then what is here? Well, those are the functions. First of all, it's going to be a short exact sequence because this is surjective. It's a subset here. And what are these? These are functions that manage when. So maybe we'll call this churn roots, I don't know, x1 through xr. So this is r tuple of numbers. So this is, you have r tuple of things, and when is it comes from an element of GLR? GLR is a matrix of the form 1 plus blah blah blah. So this means one of these guys equal to 1. Okay, so when one of the nofs I is equal to 1. So this is concretely. This is the R symmetric power of the curve. This we think of one kind of cross R symmetric, R minus one symmetric power of the curve. And so this means we have an R tuple, and we restrict it to the, when we set one of this as one, and it has to go to zero. And that's if you write, if you usually we write elliptic curves kind of multiplicatively. I mean, I don't know, I usually write elliptic curves kind of multiplicatively. And so this is given by the equation product of theta xi. It means the odd theta function equals zero. That's the equation here. Or other to say that this is a divisor. This thing is a divisor. It's called the theta divisor. Because if you think of this as a modulo of bundles, these are the bundles that have a section. These are the bundles that among which one of the churn roots is one. So that's the that's closely given by that equation. And so this is an ideal. This is ideal is locally principal because it's just a divisor. Well, the shift of ideal. And it's given by equation, this product of theta function is equals to zero. You see, it is the odd theta function that the ones that vanish at the original elliptic curve. And so now from this, what we're supposed to infer is that we infer that the model situation is this: you have maybe an R tuple of things, and then you look for, and you'd like to, you have something defined where one of these entries is one, and you'd like to. So. Yeah. So this is. I guess I don't need to write another thing. So this means I'd like to interpolate. This is not an ordered collection of points of the curve. This is a divisor, and you'd like to interpolate a function or later a section of a Lie bundle from that divisor to the whole thing. That's one thing, and then second is kind of very importantly is that this thing is. This object here this is a Lie bundle. Not trivial. It's not even degree of that Lie bundle is not zero. And so this is the fact that it's not trivial. it's kind of deep. So because what does it say? It says that this object has to do this object was has to do with the tone space. And it says in usual cohomology and usual K theory, the cohomology or the K theory of the tone space is isomorphic to the cohomology or the K theory of the base. That's the tone isomorphism. And here, it's not isomorphic. It's a rank one thing, but it's not isomorphic. It's a line bind. It's not O. Okay, so this says that tome isomorphism gets a twist in elliptic cohomology. So you're not gonna, so in other words, this you call this thing, so maybe we'll so you call this thing. Color. We will call this sheaf tome sheaf and denote it by theta v, maybe theta minus v rather, because you're going to go to the trivial one, and so you get a sequence. So in general, you're going to get a sequence where the when you have remember when we had M was embedded as a zero section into total space of some vector bundle, this would go to the so you're going to get the exact sequence of the theta of minus V goes to O of the total space of V, and this will go O of the V minus zero section. It's not really exact yet. We didn't discuss this thing yet. In principle, this could be kernel curve. Come on, I'm doing great time. So this is maybe there'll be few kind of important, I don't know, maybe this lecture a little too, the, I mean, maybe too many important points, but this is one of them. Is important that this tome isomorphism is not an isomorphism of elliptic cohomology. And so you get these funny things, and which is good, because you think if you're used to kind of computation in invariant cohomology, you know that like where does this thing show up? For instance, it shows up in general definition of push forwards. So. If I have a push forward f from y to x, then and this map is complex oriented, means it can be factored into things like embedding with a complex normal bundle and projection along the fibers of a complex bundle. Then there is a wrong way map that uses tome isomorphism to take the cohomology of y and the cohomology of x. But since in elliptic cohomology you get this kind of twist, then you're gonna get a map from this theta bundle of minus the normal bundle to this F goes to the O of elliptic cohomology. I'll just approximate this on Y goes to that of X. This means O of elliptic cohomology of X. And that's okay because this is, you see, this is, you know, this the two principal examples of that are, one is when you have an embedding with a complex normal bundle, so y is a subset in x, and then if you're used to computation McCrane cohomology, then what you have to do to compute this push forward, well, you have to look at the weights in this normal bundle, and your push forwards will be given by the product of the theta function of these weights. But again, the theta function is not a function. It's a section of some line bundle. So it has to be for this to be I mean, it has to be, if you would like this to be the map, then you have to go from minus of that line bundle to here. And similarly, the other possibility is when your map is integration along the fibers of some vibration. Again, vibrations are complex. Then what you have to do is you have to look at the weights in the fibers, and then you put things like one of this theta in denominator. And again, this is not a function. So you would like this to be a function. I mean, if this to be a well-defined map, it has to go from a twisted source to your target. That's okay. That's right. There's somehow in this story there are kind of two lower shrieks. One is, so we're talking about sheets on some scheme. And so there is, first of all, there's a lower shriek of the sheets, and then there's a map between those lower shrieks. So that's the push forward would be kind of the map between the lower shrieks of some sheets. It's also usually denoted as lower shrieks, so they're pretty confusing. Okay. So this is, right? And so in particular, like if we would like to define like a homology class corresponding to submanifold, what does it mean to have a submanifold? Does it mean to define a cohomology class? It means you want to push forward the fundamental class. It means you want to push forward one in cohomology. And that's not quite working. You have to twist it. So like one is not a section of that sheet. You have to twist this thing by something. So if you'd like to define a class of submanifold, first of all, you need some bundle on the target so that if you twist this, you need to, you know, you twist it by something. You have to twist it to by, in other words, you want to twist it by O of Y. You would like this to go to O of maybe theta of some vector bundle V such that the condition is that V restricted to Y equals the normal bundle of X and Y. I mean, that's not, you have to first find some bundle V like that, and then you have that class. Like, for instance, the class of X itself is okay, because the normal bundle to X itself is 1, means trivial bundle, and so if 1 goes to 1, it's okay, there's fundamental class. But if you'd like the class of a point, then this V has to be the tangent bundle of X, so you're going to get the class of a point lies, it's not a section of functions, it's a section of theta of the tangent bundle. It's clear, right? If you're embedding a point, then it's supposed to be a product of all the tangent waves, so it's a theta of the tangent bundle. Okay, so maybe I'll be a little bit. Yeah, I'm a little bit ahead of myself here. And so, first thing is that. Maybe two. Look at an example. What's elliptic cohomology of P3? Oh, sorry, that's P3. That example there. So let's just first, before we discuss any kind of line bundles or that, just that space. What's it going to look like? So then we need to glue something in the order specified here. So maybe so that you have it all in kind of one place. So let's start with, and I'd like, maybe I'll take a torus equivariant, so this A will be like this, and the torus A will act by A1, A2, A3. And the last one, well, we just make one. Because it's a P3, I don't really need to scale the fourth coordinate, I'm already scaling the first three. And so then I have my P3 written as C3, union C2, union C1, union C0, the way I've written it here. And okay, I start with elliptic homology of C3, that just contracts to that fixed point. And so for that, I'm just getting. For that, I'm just getting. Something which looks like that. I mean, sorry, this is. Right. Sorry. So this is a torus, three-dimensional torus. And this is my picture. So elliptic homology, whatever, of a equivalent elliptic homology of a point. That's just three copies of my elliptic curve. And it looks like, you know, if you think about this, some kind of elliptic curve as being kind of linear space, then this is something three-dimensional space. And I drew three copies of elliptic curve as a two-dimensional space. But all I meant to say is that if I think of elliptic curve as kind of like a linear space, this is just, well, okay, that's a linear space. Right. And then now we have to glue this guy in. Right. So we have to have a map. So in principle, we're supposed to have another one for this. Right. So this is. We're supposed to be attaching another copy of the same thing to here. But we have to, when we glue, we should be thinking about the normal bundle here. The normal bundle here has the weight, maybe called it A1 over A2. Right? So it has to be, we have to think about the function that vanishes when A1 is equal to A2. So there will be a divisor here, so maybe a1 equals a2. And what we're really adding are not all functions here, but only those functions that vanish here. So when we glue, in what we're gluing, when we're going to get a union of these two planes along the divisor where this guy, sorry. I mean, what we've glued the first two things, what we're just getting is just P1, right? And so we should be getting with something which looks like a homology of P1. Homology of P1 is, well, the two fixed points, and there are two, you know, there's really effectively one-dimensional torus acts there, and it means you have two copies of elliptic homology or whatever homology of the point for that torus, and you glue them at the point. And that's what happened here. And now we need to glue the pink one. So in the pink one, so this is the divisor where theta A1 over A2 equals 0. This is my theta bundle. This means when it vanishes, it means when this guy is 2 equal. Now we're gluing the pink one. So the pink one, the red one, take the red one, and we're gluing the red one, there will be two normal weights. Now this one, A1 over A3, A1 over A2 over A3. So we have to think about two lines where A3 equals. So this will be, I have to take theta of A3, or no, A2 over A3. That's theta of A1 over A3 equals 0, and that is when either A3 equals A3 equals A2 or A3 equals A1. And so when I glue this in, I'm going to get, with some luck, let me see if I can do this picture in real time. That. And so on and so forth. And of course, you realize, and once we're done with the gluing, you realize that something we should have expecting from the very beginning. Because what is this thing? What is this thing here? This thing here, I can define by one equation. I mean, the union of these three planes, or the union when I also glue the fourth one. Let me not try to glue in the fourth one. So So when I'm done with this gluing, what I'm gonna get? I'm gonna get something I could have defined by one equation, namely I could have defined a product of theta x over ai equals zero. Ai goes from one to, well, here in this picture to three, but in principle goes to four. And what is this? What is this x? This x is this x here, that is the churn root of O of 1 on P1. So the cohomology of P1 is generated by churn class of O of 1. So we decided that any bundle gives a map to the classifying space. In particular, a line bundle, you have a map to elliptic curve, to the elliptic curve of the theory. So that is X. And the relation in elliptic cohomology are just the same as the relation in ordinary cohomology. So in ordinary cohomology, you'll have the exact same picture, but except you'll be writing stuff like in ordinary cohomology, you'll be writing things like product of X minus AI. This product equals. Yeah, this product equals I goes from 1 to the 4. That product equals 0. That defines you the ordinary Quern cohomology of P3. And the elliptic cohomology is not the same. So it's arrangement. So in ordinary cohomology, it's arrangements of four hyperplanes. And this is an arrangement of abelian subvarieties in a product of four elliptic curves. Okay. And so this is. Right, maybe I'll get a drink of water and we'll proceed with the. Sure.
So can I think about cohomology classes as theta functions modulo that relation, or is it completely wrong-headed?
Say it again.
Can I think about elliptic cohomology classes on CP as theta functions? I mean, functions on this E.
That's right. Yeah, sections of some line bundles on here. Yeah.
That's not sections of
line. You have some. So you should imagine the spectrum of elliptic cohomology is like a union of some. So you think, I mean, it's not exactly right, but I mean, you should imagine spectrum of ordinary cohomology is a union of linear spaces arranged in a way that your space is glued together. And then same with elliptic cohomology is a union of, you know, roughly a billion varieties glued in the way your space is glued together. And elliptic cohomology classes are sections of some line bundles on this. And why they're sections of some line bundles, we discussed, because this is like, suppose I want to define like a class of Lagrangian. Suppose my Lagrangian is super nice and smooth, then still I need to, still I will get this contribution from the theta function in the normal bundle. So it's not a section of a, it's not a function, it's a section of some line bundle on this object. That makes sense? And in fact, so maybe this is a good point of transition, that in fact we will need what we need. So now maybe closer to the. So we would like X, now to be more or less symplectic. You'll see. And then you see there's some kind of miracle has to happen for this interpolation to be uniquely solvable. You will see in a second. So we would like the class to be interpolated. Class to construct. It has to be more or less Lagrangian. So what does it mean? That means that if I remember, we decided that the fundamental class, okay, it's a function. It's a function one. Class of a point, it corresponds to the theta bundle of the tangent bundle. So this means to be, this has to be Lagrangian. It means to be roughly, so this is a section. So this means a section of some bundle, we call it S, which should be, what that bundle should be like the square root of the theta bundle of the tangent bundle of X up to degree 0. So the existence of that square root is super non-trivial because if I have so maybe I'll try to drive this point home. Because suppose I have an abelian variety, maybe call it, you know, consider. Maybe just say I have n copies of elliptic curve. And I look at line bundles here. What is this group like? So first of all, there's inside here there are degree zero line bundles. Pick zero of. Okay, this we understand. This is just n copies of the dual curve. But the degrees here, but this is the notion of degree is not a number. Is a quadratic form. So I'll write S2 of kind of Zn. Degree of a line bundle on this object is not a number, it's a symmetric integer matrix. Meaning that if I have here like theta of some maybe coordinates, you know, z to the alpha, that the degree of that is not alpha. The degree of that is kind of alpha squared, alpha tensor alpha in here. To have, so in other words, to find this is a big group, and then this has this runs this space has many, this the elliptic homology has many components, and to find something which actually has a square root, it's not so easy, and so usually in the situation of kind of interest in geometric representation theory and so on and so forth, usually we just assume that in fact the T of X has a square root, means there's something called polarization. Plus the dual. So for instance, if X sits in some tangent bundle, then you take either half of the tangent bundle, and then you just take this part to be theta of the polarization. The square root you take that. So it's not. I don't have so many. I mean, I don't know any examples where it happens to have a square root, but. When the tangent bundle itself is not split like that. Like since we're talking about cotangent bundle to something, then for a cotangent, the tangent bundle of a cotangent bundle, it's you can split it in many ways. You can take the tangent bundle to the base, the tangent bundle to the fiber, and so this will have that splitting and it'll have that square root. But if it's not like that, I don't know. You can have be an open set in the cotangent bundle. They are. Yeah, like Nakajima variety is an open set in a cotangent bundle. In a stack cotangent bundle. Yeah. So yeah, right. Then it's tricky. I agree. Yeah, that's right. Then I agree. That's tricky. So now what do we have now? Now I would like to interpolate things like this. So, okay, that was a beautiful picture, but now it's time for it to go. So we have some. I'll write first the original sequence was O of some x, or O of elliptical homology of x maybe, but I'll just abbreviate to that, goes to O of this x prime, and then everything. So in principle, in elliptical homology, everything is still a graded theory. So in principle, there's some index here. And then here we get the O of that I. Sorry, not O. The Tom space minus the normal bundle in X to the M. And still, in principle, is this index. And so the first observation, kind of crucial observation, is that this map, in the way, so since we're constructing our certification of some accurate data, attracting manifolds and so forth. This map here is a map of these are sheaves. These are sheaves of some schemes. So this map as a map of sheaves here. That is injective. It's kind of the first important thing. Maybe I'll put it in red. This is what Atiyah bought very, very long time ago called, what did they call it? Equivalently perfect or something like that. So this map is injective. Why is it injective? Because this map here, if you maybe this map composed with a pullback, but this is multiplication by theta, product of theta of the normal weight. However, this, we have some group action in NX. These are non-trivial. Have non-trivial group equivalent weights. So these are things which equivalent variables actually enter here. Right? And so this is multiplication by some function of some variable. So in particular, that is not multiplication by zero. Like if they had some normal weight was zero, you'd be multiplying by theta of the trivial thing, you'd be multiplying by zero, and it will not be an injective map. But since our group actually acts in the normal direction, that is multiplication by something which is not a zero divisor, and so this means this map is injective. Okay? That's super important. Because this tells us if this map is injective, this means this map is zero. And by the same token, the next map is zero. And since our long exact sequence splits into many short exact sequences, and we can therefore kill off this all these indices, we don't worry about them. Okay. But elliptical homology is a confusing subject because elliptical homology class is a section of some line bundle on some scheme. And those line bundles themselves have cohomology. You have a line bundle in the scheme, it itself, in addition to section, it also has cohomology. We got it to a map of sheaves, but now we need to the map of sections. And it's like a next step. And so, well, the sections not of this, but sections of this twisted. So we're going to twist it by this x. Goes to restriction here. This is still map of sheaves. So this is still, we just twisted it by a line bundle. And here we're going to get these are maps. Maybe I'm being repetitive, but it is super important. These are maps of sheets, not of sections yet. And now we would like to take global sections. Right? We would like the elliptic cohomology class is not something defined kind of long-term, it's something defined global. Right? So this is we need sections of those. And so what we're going to say about that? So we'll say that H naught of this will map to H naught of that. Will map to where? Will map to H1 of that. I'll write it as X tensor theta minus X normal bundle of X and M. And then here goes H naught. Here I'll just copy like that. And what we would like to have, here. What do we need for that? We need this term controls injectivity. So this term says this lift is unique. And this term controls surjectivity. This term says this lift exists. Now, what do we know about that? So you see, there's something. It's going to be a real balancing act. So this is not something which is true robustly. This is something which is true robustly in a very, very thin set of examples. So, I mean, most of the discussion we had so far applies to very general topological spaces, but now we need to have some accidents we need to happen. And so the first accident we will need to happen is that if we arranged this S to be like that, then I first claim that this line bundle here, this guy here, has degree zero. I'm slightly oversimplifying, but I assume it's unfamiliar material to all of you, and we're in the second hour of it, and so let me gloss over certain things, but it has degree zero. And why it has degree zero? It has degree zero for the following reason: is that this is what's going to be. What's the degree of that theta function? The degree of this theta function. Degree of that thing minus the normal bundle. What's it going to be? Well, we had a formula. We had a formula which is just erased. This would be, this guy is a product over all normal weights over the corresponding theta function. So this would be a sum over all repellent weights wi times wi. But you see, this enters here quadratically. And so it's going to be the same whether this is, if I think of a repelling weight or I think about the corresponding attracting weight, if my variety is something like symplectic, means has some pairing between the tangent, some pairing on the tangent bundle, then this object here is the same if I replace w by minus w. So it's just some half of all possible normal weights. And similarly, and this S is some other half of all normal weights. And so therefore, this guy's, the degrees between them will cancel. But this is for the reason that my bundles are composed out of things which peak like a one half of the tangent direction. So this will have degree zero. And so what's the general fact about a section of a line bundle, if L is a section. Sorry, if of line bundle. Maybe like that, I'll write it like this. If S is a section of, you have an abelian variety, ab, and a line bundle, and this is degree zero, then we have the following dichotomy. Then either L is trivial, or the section is zero. And in fact, any cohomology. It's kind of remarkable fact about abelian varieties that if I have a degree zero line bundle of abelian variety, it has, it's either, if it's non-trivial, it has no cohomology of any kind. All cohomology of a non-trivial degree zero line bundle of abelian variety vanish. And so, therefore, what we need to arrange is we need to arrange to this guy to be non-trivial. And how are we going to get that? Well, we'll use the fact that we can multiply by degree zero line bundles here. And specifically, what sort of thing we will use? We can put here. The kind of thing that we can put here, we can put the kind of twist of the following kind. We take, so it has to be something of degree zero. So if I put like a theta function of maybe some ample line bundle, this would not work because it has some positive degree. But if I take the ample line bundle and I hit it with another equivariant variable called z, it's just extra equivariant variable, just scales that line bundle. And I divide it by, maybe call it line bundle. I already used L there, but maybe I'll call it L again. Then if I divide it by theta of L times theta of Z, that is degree zero and everything. And the ampleness of this line bundle then guarantees that this guy is not going to be identical. And the meaning of these things, this variable z here, this is something that pairs with ample line bundles. That is, those are the Kähler variables. On Thursday, I don't know how much information I got across today and how much of that you will remember come Thursday, but the plan for Thursday is to explain that you can do, if X was something like an Nakajima variety, you can do curve counts in X in terms of that sort of stuff, where Z are the variables that count the degree of the curve. And so these are, and the way they enter here is they enter in this shift. And they enter in the shift by pairing with an ample line bundle on X. And so this is, you can take this guy, you can twist it, and if by twisting you can make sure that this is not going to be a trivial bundle, and if it's non-trivial, this cohomology is zero. And this cohomology, so in general, so if you have, so what is it? What's it going to look like? So suppose you have, this will be the last diagram, and then we'll maybe call it a day. So we now gotten ourselves a new class of variables, which we call Z, and they're parametrized by what? They're parametrized, they live in pick X tensor R elliptic curve, and they vary here. And over in our on our in everything and everything and everything was happening kind of over that base. And then over that base we had we had a question. We had this component M, and we were asking whether this bundle S, twisted by theta minus the normal bundle, and twisted further by this part which we'll call usually called U. I mean, not usually, but I mean, I usually call in my paper call this thing U. If this thing happens to be trivial. If this thing happens to be trivial, then this is going to be some locus. When this is trivial, there's going to be some locus in here. And this locus will look some kind of discriminant locus, look like that. So we have some family of abelian varieties. Variety, don't change. You have an abelian variety, and you have a family of line bundles, which is generically non-trivial, but can be trivial in codimension one. And what's going to happen? Then if you consider cohomology of that variety, if you push forward to this base, then you have zero global section, because a global section would be determined by a point, away from this discriminant. And so that's, and away from the discriminant, our line bundle is non-trivial, and so therefore have zero global sections. But this can have H1, it can have over the discriminant. And so this H1 would be some, so this is, this H1 would be some torsion shift lives on that discriminant, and this means the elliptic, what does it mean here? It means that map exists as a rational map, away from the discriminant, and it has poles. So this bi-elliptic stable log has poles on the discriminant. And that's super important because those are the actual poles. When you do the curve counting, there are poles in there. So there's your Kähler variables, and then you define by some kind of series expansion first, but then you can see them to analytic function, but these analytic functions have poles. And those poles have this sort of origin. Those poles are the resonances when some bundle happens to be trivial. Okay, so I'm sorry for leaving only 5 minutes for a question, but that's pretty much what I wanted to say today.
So if I understood this discussion at the end, this hyperplane arrangement, this sort of root system type thing, just mm-hmm. came out of the fact that you were trying to shift this bundle to be non-trivial.
You can say it like that.
Like somehow, because I knew, like, and maybe we'll discuss this in the problem session, but like, if you give me some variety, like T star PN or something,
yeah,
I happen to know a way to write down a hyperplane arrangement, and like, it was very simple and combinatorial and didn't require me to think about, I don't know, these bundles here. But somehow you're saying that if I work out all the details,
but those are
said,
the, so there are two hyperplane arrangements here. There's a hyperplane arrangement, so maybe this is, since I apologize to Tudor. He says that my lecture will include some kind of discussion of 3D mirror symmetry. I mean, or you hinted it might, but maybe this is a good place to be explicit about it. So if we have some x, there are two kinds of hyperplane arrangements that have to do exchange by this mirror, and one is a hyperplane arrangement in the space of a equivariant variables, and another in the space of Kähler variables. And so that is that's the one in the Kähler variables. And that's, so that's...
Okay.
Yeah, and then, but, you know, in specific examples, it's not gonna be something unexpected to you, but the reason that elliptic stable envelopes have poles at exactly those places, it is because this happened to be exactly the place where some bundle turns out to be trivial.
Okay.
more questions?
A question about the elliptic cohomology theory. So I can imagine doing your computation with P3 for like projective bundles and then maybe trying to prove a localization theorem using that. Does that happen somehow?
Right. I mean, I mean, most proofs of localization theorems, they're just going to work whatever verbatim for elliptic. I mean, whatever you use for ordinary cohomology is going to work verbatim work for elliptic cohomology. So it's not. By localization, you mean something like. Right. Maybe it needs to be. Maybe not to be a little bit specific about what one means by localization, but usual proofs of any kind of localization result, they're not specific to the kind of cohomology that you use.
I guess I'm wondering what happens to this twist. What does it look like? Does it need to be modified because of that?
But I mean the simplest notion of localization theorem. What does it say? It says that whatever. So if suppose I have isolated fixed points, for instance, then I'm saying that under some hypothesis, my elliptic cohomology, you know, it's going to be some sub-scheme, but its normalization is going to be just the union of elliptic cohomology of a point over those fixed points. That's, you know, if you had some arrangement here, if you take normalization, it'll be just the union of them. And so that's kind of maybe the basic version. How are you going to prove it for ordinary cohomology? It's the same proof will work for elliptic cohomology.
Okay, but I guess I'm wondering, like, in some of the versions, the normal bundles appear and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, they appear. So what does it say? It says that, you know, when we were doing this gluing, that we had this kind of theta functions and so forth, but these theta functions were different from structure shift only on some codimension, some small codimension. So if we tensor with the field of fraction, we lose all of them. So it'll be just a union.
Oh.
The difference between a line bundle and the structure shift, it just is something happens in some codimension. So if you're willing to go to the fraction field, then you don't see that.
Okay, I see. Thanks.
Yeah.
So I feel like you made some references to connections between elliptic cohomology and quantum cohomology in the sense of curve counting.
Yeah, this is going to be that's going to be Thursday. Yeah.
So I mean, can you explain in any more
detail? Oh, if you're impatient, yeah, sure. So
I mean, sorry. If you want to keep
so okay, so that's maybe I'll give you know maybe I'll give like a really high level explanation to you now and then explain. And then you can decide whether you're going to come Thursday, and then there'll be more pedestrian explanation next time. I apologize. This is going to be slightly impressionistic, but I think it might be helpful. So suppose you have let's talk about in this kind of generality. You have some kind of stack X, and this X would be some kind of curl X stack, and that X would be the kind of stack that you normally have, like whatever, like algebraic symplectic reduction of, you know, something like whatever, maybe T star or some. Which I apologize, this is not M before, some kind of matter field, just ordinary mod G, just ordinary quotient stack. And then, okay, and then you have some stable locus, but there's some kind of unstable part of that, maybe I'll draw it like that, you know, some kind of unstable thing. And the most unstable point is just zero, and there's some stable thing. And suppose you have some cohomology class already defined on the stable locus, then you would like it to extend it to the unstable locus. What a physicist would do? A physicist would integrate. I mean, you're just gonna go, what we're gonna do is we're gonna take all possible maps of P1 with two marked points, which I'll draw like a bundle, and then have some kind of, like a P1. Sorry, draw it like that. And the point is that the zero of P1 is gonna map to zero or some other unstable point you'd like, maybe the zero is the most unstable point, so might as well extend there. And then infinity will map somewhere here. And so then what you would like to have some kind of integral over this is my kind of map f of p1. And then what we're gonna do? We're gonna do this maybe like this, like that. You have some kind of maps, space of maps. And we'll look at the locus, I'll write infinity, the ones which are regular at infinity, and then you have evaluation of infinity, and then so we're going to pull back some whatever class here, mm-hmm. pull back class here, and then we're going to push forward it to by evaluation of zero. And then here, what can we do? Here, you know, we have to, when we pull back something, you have to hit it with something and then, you know, push forward. And okay, so then what we're gonna hit, there'll be the, you know, maps of all possible degrees. So we put the z, some new variable z, the degree of f. And then just the k-theoretic, whatever, the k-theoretic of that thing. And if we do this diagram, maybe this is not exactly right, but if we do this diagram, the fact that this z here, and right, I forgot to say, you also need, we want this to be equivariant with respect to the action of q. One does this diagram, then one in fact recovers the extension, this extension. But of course, the way it's used, it's exactly the opposite, because we want to integrate that. And so we want to use the fact that we know abstractly what this extension is to do this integral. But then the point is that these variables z are exactly the variables which I had somewhere, because that is exactly how this is for all the diagrams to commute correctly. You need this variable z to be matched with those variables over there.
All right, thanks.
Sure.
Is there something like elliptic quantum cohomology?
Right, so it's it's a little bit tricky. You would like there's some kind of accidents have to happen now for this space. We discussed that you need to have some good theory. You need some kind of some kind of balance. And now you need some sort of balance for the space of maps. And that is not so clear about how often that happens. Like a very kind of pedestrian question related to that is that suppose I, functions like this, they solve some difference equation, so on and so forth. And then example of that difference equation are like Knishnik-Zamolodchikov equations. Now, Knishnik-Zamolodchikov equations also exist in elliptic version, but only if your elliptic quantum group only acts, it only restricts to the weight zero subspace of representation of elliptic quantum group. And that, you know, this condition of weight zero is exactly means that the corresponding spaces of maps have some extra nice properties for elliptic things to balance. And so there are not so many examples. Like for Grassmannians, that would be exactly just the half filling. For the Hilbert scheme of points, that would be the Hilbert scheme of 0 points. And you know, this is not, I don't know, maybe David knows somehow. I mean, David was agreeing with Mimi over there. Maybe he knows more examples where you can also have a good theory of, you know, kind of do elliptic theory for this modular space of maps. Yeah, I'm not, you know, I don't know so many examples of that.
Right. So just a quick question. So sometimes push forward maps and elliptic homology are given by characters of vertex algebras. Like push forward from X to a point is the character of CDOs, and if I push forward to the total space of a vector bundle, it's the character of some fermionic system. Are there secretly vertex algebras underlying?
Yeah, of course. So you should ask. This should be quantification of something, and what this quantification should be. Of course, I mean everybody knows that should be some kind of quantization of loops to X, and that means some kind of vertex algebra. And that's, so that's been somehow on the table forever, but it's, I haven't done it. Maybe some other people have done it or will have done it. I don't know. So, but in principle, right. In principle, there's this begs for actual categorification. Maybe Mina knows how to categorify it. I don't know. I don't have an answer, but you should say, the elliptic homology of X is kind of like the K theory of the quantization of loops to X, and so that should be the disk loops to X should give you vertex algebras, and so that should be all. I don't have a. Maybe somebody knows some results to that effect, but they are known to me. I mean, some results, so to speak, beyond the discussion. I mean, is in terms of, you know, kind of saying what it should be, that it's pretty clear, but actually, like, where it's actually written down, then it's, I don't know.
It would be nice to make that structure more precise.
Yeah, that'd be super. It sounds like a super project, but yeah. it's you can add it to my long list of failures of not being able to complete that project. But I'd be happy if somebody in this audience completes this project or at least makes progress on that. Yeah, I think it's a fun question, so it should be. Okay, you see. I'm very happy to pass the baton to the younger generation on this. So.
Any other questions or online? Okay, well, let's thank Andre again.